Hi everyone, this is Phuong. In this podcast, I'm going to talk about the impact of structural adjustment programs on the environment in Latin America. The first half will explain what these programs were and their impacts on the economy and social fabric of Latin American countries. And the second half focuses on its implication for environment and conservation. So a little bit of context. In the later half of the 20th century, Latin American countries were recovering from a lot of revolutions and badly needed the money for internal restructuring and economic development. Like developing countries in other parts of the world, they borrowed money from developed nations such as the US or European countries, but lacked the ability to repay these debts and spiraled into a crisis starting in the late 1970s and early 1980s, which is now referred to as the lost decades in many Latin American countries. To help these countries in crisis, the Bretton Woods Institution, or World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, also known as the IMF, arranged rescheduling of these payment periods and offered additional loans. These loans were not unconditional like the one before them. They came with what's known as structural adjustment programs, SAPs, macroeconomic changes required for borrowing countries. Basically, developing countries have to implement economic reform policies to qualify for these loans. These included devaluing the national currency, minimizing government spending, promoting foreign investment in a competitive economy, and changing from domestic production or substitution import to economic geared toward export. In theory, these policies were meant to generate income, foreign income, and liberalize national economies for developing nations, helping them become more integrated in the global economy, and then repay their debts by earning more from exports and while spending less. This is a very common approach for developmental funding in the 20th century for countries in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Caribbean. So these were multi-million dollar projects with the backing of economically and politically powerful countries. They were widely adopted across the world. But did they work? The short answer is no. Contrary to what the programs aim to achieve, borrowing countries emerged post-SAPs as more in debt, with higher rates of poverty incidence, and with much weaker governance. 10 years of SAP implementation between 1982 and 1992 saw Latin American countries having even increased external debt outstanding. All the countries, except perhaps Cuba, which didn't own independent or internal structure adjustment, but that's another story for another podcast. Whereas most of the countries had to open up their national economy to both foreign investment and competition, and they came under the pressure of lowering production costs by employing fewer people and paying less. This was a form of jobless growth that led to decline in standards of living for these developing countries and so much higher poverty rates. According to the Economic Commissions for Latin America, in 1980, 30% of the population in the region lived below the poverty line. Only 5 years later, the proportion had increased to 39% and continued to do so throughout the decade. Tools that the government have to combat these declines, including social welfare programs and state intervention, were basically annihilated at this point as part of tightening government spending. So SAPs left these countries not only in a worse off economic and social situation, but also more ill-equipped to recover and take care of their own people. At the same time, the amount of influence that an external lending institution can have on a country's system destabilizes governance. Countries become dependent on foreign investment and support. This creates a vicious cycle of dependence with debt and declines after debts and declines for developing countries. So the literature is written a lot about economic and social consequences of SAPs, which I talked about briefly above. In this next part, I will talk about how it affected the environment and conservation strategies in Latin America. Latin American countries have been the focus of many conservation activities because of large intact habitat, the most well-known one being the Amazon forest, and high level of biodiversity. Here, we see both negative and, I would argue, some positive effects. For continuity, though, I'll start with the negative points. First, the pressure to generate foreign income led developing countries to turn to agricultural products and natural resources. Agriculture, forestry, fishery, and mining all underwent major restructuring processes that intensified resource extraction and exports of price-sensitive cash crops and raw material also favored at a clear disadvantage to domestic industries. Secondly, SAP policies to attract foreign investment and increase export revenues meant relaxing a lot of environmental regulations. One example can be found in Ecuador, where oil corporations were given tax breaks and exempted from doing environmental impact assessments for large projects such as pipelines. Third, because of budget restrictions, funding for environmental regulations were among the first to be cut. In the Brazilian Amazon, we're talking about reductions as large as 50% in 1999. The expenditures of environmental protection institutions were also cut to less than 20% of their budgets. And finally, SAP led Latin American countries to adopt a hands-off model of conservation that originated from the US. This model, which was implemented widely across the world, naturalized intact forests and habitat and displaced indigenous communities while sanctioning extractive industries with high environmental costs. As we've learned in classes, as part of the neo-extractivist narrative promoted by pink tie leaders in Latin America. And it was only later that indigenous groups were granted land rights. However, their efforts to protect their land from illegal mining or other polluting activities are frequently blocked by the government or just simply not addressed. In a case reported by Cofin Community in Ecuador, officials of the environmental ministry advised them to negotiate payments with the polluting industries. All these meant increased deforestation, pollution, and environmental destruction in large parts of the region. The legacy of SAPs are long-lasting. Countries that implement SAPs in the last 3 to 4 decades have economies and their government structured in such a way that they have to continue promoting environmentally destructive industries for short-term gains and to provide employment and income for their citizens. I believe this is, however, the kind of pressure that the global economy continues to exert on developing countries, and it will not be until an alternative development model like Buen Vivir that emphasizes harmonious relationship with nature and human well-being as the center of growth, instead of capitalist or neo-liberalist development. These harmful growth-driven policies will continue to be implemented and cause harm to the environment and human well-being. So at this point, we've talked a lot about the major negative consequences of SAPs. You might wonder, is there anything good that came out of them? Well, luckily with conservations, there are. There are a few of them. If there's anything that SAPs can claim that are as a good legacy that they leave, it would be the presence and active engagement of international NGOs in Latin America. In the 1990s, these NGOs pushed for the establishment of parks, reserves, and protected areas, and also brought to the region their expertise on land management and biodiversity monitoring. The result? 20% of Latin American land is set aside for conservation, compared to an average of 13% for the global south. Admittedly, As I mentioned above, state-led conservation sometimes sponsored extractive industries under the name of neo-extractivism, while ignoring the needs of local communities. But the impact of this and these kind of model is being brought to light in their increasing public opposition, as we're seeing with the development of Amazon frontier in Brazil. More recently, these NGOs and newer ones based out of the region are also advocating for a more humanized approach to conservation, which means refuting the pristine myth of Latin America and acknowledging the right to land use by indigenous groups. Another positive impact of SAPs in Latin America on conservation, although indirect, is that countries are quick to adapt market mechanisms for conservation. Among them, many have become success stories. The most famous one is probably Costa Rica's Payment for Environmental Services program, in which the government pay farmers and other landowners to not deforest, which has reversed its deforestation trend and brought forest cover back from 21% in the 1987 to about 53% to 2010, so more than double land of forest cover. Funding for the work of these environmental NGOs and these market-based conservation are still coming from large institutions like the World Bank, the United Nations, and the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID. But I think these institutions are now much more cognizant of past impacts and are supporting more local solutions. A report by the World Bank in 2002 called Expanding Financing for Biodiversity Conservation named local communities as the bedrock of conservation efforts, and also discussed mobilizing local communities in Colombia and restoring land around national parks and protected areas as one of their success stories. Other initiatives that are market-based implemented in Latin America include eco-certification, ecotourism, and marketing natural forest products from the rainforest, which are providing direct financial benefits and seeing increased international interest for conservation in Latin American region and the Caribbean. So that's the end of my podcast. I consulted quite a few papers in writing this podcast. These included studies on SAPs and their impacts, articles on foreign policy and Manga Bay or editorial, and a chapter by Professor Eric Carter and colleague about conservation and sustainability in Latin America and the Caribbean. I learned a lot from researching for this podcast, and I hope that you enjoyed listening to it. Please take care and stay well. It's been nice talking to you.